The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk with Mastercard.
Do you remember as a child playing out in the garden or in the park and collecting insects and tadpoles and frogs? Collie Ennis is a man who loved collecting creatures like this as a child, and he never stopped, to the point at which he is now the science officer for the Herpetological Society of Ireland and research associate at Trinity College Dublin. Collie, good morning.
Good morning.
Did I say that right?
You did.
It's a very big word for Bank Holiday Monday.
Yeah, herpetological.
Frog spawn. This is the time of year where frog spawn should be plentiful. And I remember as a kid in primary school, they would bring it in, they'd put it on the window, and we would watch the frogs develop, and it would be a great lesson in nature. It's becoming harder to do it, is it?
Yeah, we're getting approaches at the society level from teachers who are saying they can't go out and find frog spawn for their classrooms. We've been monitoring urban areas, especially around Dublin, we've been watching the populations of frogs in those areas for the last 5 or 6 years, and we've noticed a drastic decline each year when we go back to sites where we would have seen massive amounts of frog spawn.
But it should be everywhere.
It should be everywhere.
It used to be completely insidious in ponds
exactly
at this time of year.
The side of the roads kind of thing. But they'd fill the pond so much that they'd have to spawn in puddles. It was incredible back even in the 80s. But now with intensive agriculture, urban sprawl, pesticide use, pollution, global warming, all these factors are hitting our native amphibians, which are the frogs, newts, and our native toad. It's really frightening to see the drop in numbers.
When we see frog spawn, traditional frog spawn, could it be any number of things? I mean, it all looks the same at that very early point, does it?
Yeah. I mean, again, they're getting hit from all these different factors. On local levels, it could be just maybe a pollution event. Somebody dropped some oil or something like that into a pond. But it's mainly, the big problem really is habitat fragmentation. So in urban areas where you would have had open gardens, now you have brick wall gardens, so frogs can't move around. And urban areas are hugely underrated value to the natural world, especially gardens that are linked up, because animals can move around, hedgehogs, frogs and stuff like that.
Well, we were just talking about foxes and their habits with Mike Gibney, so it's similar presumably for frogs, but they can't travel as far.
They can't, and they can't get over 6 foot brick walls.
Despite their natural ability.
Yeah, exactly, they still can't jump that high. So there's things you can do on a local level to help these animals out. And we've been working with the local councils as well to try and get ponds put in parks that are specifically built for these animals. No fish in them, covered well. So and kind of like making people aware that taking frog spawn out of ponds isn't a good idea, because they're under pressure in these areas and they need to be left alone to recover.
What do we have in terms of amphibians? Like we don't have that many species.
No, we've three native ones. We've got a smooth newt, a common frog, and the natterjack toad, which lives in Kerry. There's only one spot down in Kerry where they are.
Okay, so let's talk about the common frog.
Yes.
Okay, so he's the fella that we would be most familiar with.
That you grew up with, yeah. That you collected and you watched the tadpoles turn into little frogs.
How prevalent is he now?
It's getting less and less. In the countryside, you'll still see very healthy numbers of them. But even there, they're under pressure because people are draining wetlands. There's, again, intensive agriculture with pesticides and the runoff that comes off that are going into ponds. Also, ponds are being filled in to make more space for monoculture kind of grassland for cows to graze on. So they're losing all that habitat. Then with urban sprawl, as it expands, again, habitat's being destroyed.
Well, look, we'll talk about bees in a minute and the value of bees, because they actually do have a pollination element to them. Does the poor owl frog have anything going in its favour to say to the farmer, don't get rid of that pond because Kermit needs to do what, this, that or the other?
Well, first of all, ponds in themselves are a terrific source of carbon sink. So if you're talking about planted trees to absorb carbon and fight global warming, a pond will do that in a year. As soon as you put that in the ground, it starts sucking carbon out of the air.
And so for all the cows belching around, it'll all be sucked into the pond?
It can be, yeah, a good amount of it. And that provides a home for our frogs and our newts. Why frogs are important are because they're a mid table of in the food web, they're mid-table species. So they eat a lot of pests and bugs, and they also feed a lot of foxes, badgers, otters, all the animals we love that would be probably more endearing to people who are listening. But the frogs are an incredible animal in the fact that they eat all these bugs and pests and provide sustenance to a lot of our other animals. The thing is with frogs is they're a really good indicator species of a healthy ecosystem. So if they're not around, we should be really paying attention, because they indicate water quality, all that kind of stuff. These are things we have to pay attention to, you know.
The nature of frog spawn, having so many eggs, so many fertilized eggs that have all got the potential to turn into a frog or a newt or a toad or whatever. Does that not indicate that nature already felt as if they were under pressure and that having so many potential offspring was a way to offset the risk? And if the risk is heightened, then the frog's in trouble.
Yes. The reason why they have so many young is because they are eaten by everything. They're a massive, as I said, they're in the food web and they're a massive source. And a lot of their young, out of 1,000 eggs that are laid, maybe one might survive till adulthood.
Just one.
Yeah. So even though you might go down to your local park and see a big clump of eggs and you take that home, it's a bad idea, because that could be the whole population that's left in that particular area.
There are many conspiracy theorists listening to this program, and we welcome them one and all. They're very welcome listeners. One text here: since magpies got plentiful, frogs get scarce. Is there any connection?
Not really.
Would a magpie eat a frog?
Of course they would. Yeah, everything will eat frogs, unfortunately for the frogs. But
sorry if there's any frogs listening. Bad news.
It is human related. It's human driven. All these declines in our amphibians and our insects. It's human driven, and there's no point in blaming other animals. There are some invasive species that come in that can cause hassle, but what we're talking about is definitely down to us.
The natterjack toad is protected, we know
yes.
that. Is the common frog protected?
Yes, and so is our newt, under the Wildlife Act of 1970.
So in theory, can people scoop up a load of frogs and bring it home?
No,
they can't.
You can't. If you're a teacher, you can ask to take some for your school, show it developing, and then put it back in the pond where you found it.
You have to bring it back to where you found it.
Exactly. So it's not interfering with the cycle.
The newt always fascinated me, because
they're incredible little creatures, beautiful.
I was very familiar with frogs, because frogs seem to be everywhere. Newts were always that little bit rare. And the only time I've ever seen one was when it was run over on the road, and I happened to pass by it. Do they keep themselves to themselves?
They're quite cryptic little creatures. They kind of hide away, and at nighttime, during this time of year, on a moonlit night when it's quite damp, if you go to any of their breeding ponds, you'll see all these kind of lizard looking creatures, but they're actually amphibians making their way back towards the ponds to breed. And the males will go in, get these big kind of epic frills like a punk rocker down their back, and they have all these beautiful colours.
Like Jurassic Park.
Yeah, they're amazing looking. They're like little Irish dragons, little tiny water dragons.
Except they're about 3 inches.
Yeah, exactly. Less. But beautiful animals. Like, people come out doing surveys with us and they're blown away by them. And again, that's another thing. These are part of our natural heritage, and I don't want my grandkids to come into a world where there's no newts or frogs or the ability to share in that the wonder of these little creatures.
Well, I'm guessing if the point is reached whereby they can't continue to procreate in any meaningful way, we're never going to get them back, are we?
It'd be hard. I mean, like, frogs are declining all over the world thanks to various diseases and global warming and all the other things we talked about earlier on. We're fortunate in the fact that we're kind of only noticing the drop in the last 20 years, 10 to 20 years. We can do something about it now, and people at a local level can really do something about it.
Your part of your job is to go out and see how many there are out there. I mean, how do you try and quantify something that doesn't want to be found in the case of the newt, or indeed the frog that there might be a lot of in one area and very few in another? How do you go about trying to produce
a population?
You forgo
your social and family life and you go out at night and you count frogs when they're breeding. Breeding is the best time of year. So if you see a clump of spawn, that means you have two adults that laid. Some areas where there's a healthy population, you have to take out a measuring tape, measure the spawn, and try and work out how many adults would have procreated to make that spawn. With the newts, what we do is we actually go out and photograph the male's bellies because they each have an individual pattern, like a fingerprint. So you can tell.
So they're like whales, because you know the way they take photographs
exactly,
of whales' markings.
And you can tell if Larry was there 5 years ago and how he's doing and, oh, he's lost an arm.
Do you name your newts?
We give them numbers, but I sometimes give them names.
Larry the newt sounds like a good newt. I'd like to be friends with him. Is there any way, says a listener, I could encourage some wildlife to take up residency in my back garden? I live in a housing estate in West Dublin, so it's not quite the Amazon basin.
Okay, so this is what people can do, and this is what we're asking people to do, is to, first of all, let your garden get a bit messy. Nature loves mess. It loves rotten wood. It loves wildflowers. It loves weeds, the stuff we call weeds. But leave a corner of your garden that animals can use that kind of refuge to survive in. Bugs will go in there, and then the animals like the frogs and the hedgehogs and the newts will come in to feed on the bugs. Another thing you can do is put a pond in your garden. Now, a pond doesn't have to be an epic mansion type pond. It can be...
You don't need koi carp floating around.
No, you definitely don't need fish. We don't want fish in the ponds. We want wildlife ponds. So you can get a tub from IKEA or an old basin that you had in your sink. Sink it flat into the ground. Dig a hole, sink it flat in the ground and fill it with water and leave it there with a couple of rocks in it, and animals will show up and use it.
So literally build it and they will come.
100%.
The field of dreams,
yes,
of garden 100%. Ponds. Look, Collie, it's been a fascinating conversation. Lots of people texting in relation to it. So basically be nice to the frogs and the newts.
Yeah, and if you need any advice, you can check out the Pollinator Plan. Is great for, that's online. That's great for all our inverts and our insects. On our website, on the hsi.org, you'll find advice on building ponds, or you can contact us on Twitter or Facebook.